Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to Take the Black Live. My name is Daniel Roman, here for winterisscoming.net, and we have a great show for you guys today where we are going to talk about dragons, we are going to talk about Game of Thrones, we are going to talk about witches, because it is almost Halloween, and a ton of other stuff. I already said my name because I'm a fool and I did that first, but you may notice Dan Selke, who normally does this intro, is not here today. Instead, guest host, fan-sided entertainment and lifestyle director Cody Schultz is here. Cody, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks. I'm really excited to join you. I know we've got a lot of fun stuff to get to dive into this week, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, this should be a blast. So for everybody just joining, great to see you guys in the chat there. Hi, Victor. Hi, Martha and Julie. And I think that's Twisted One with a very nice font. So today we've got obviously Game of Thrones news. We've got some Marvel stuff we've got to talk about later. But we also have to talk about Game of Thrones in general, because Cody, so you had never seen Game of Thrones before, right? You just finished your first watch.
Yep, I had never. It's funny because I went into House of the Dragon blind. And hadn't watched a single episode of Game of Thrones. I had bits and pieces, of course, just when you work in this industry, you pick up things and
sure.
Are familiar with certain things, but there was like a good number going into it that I was shocked I hadn't had spoiled going into my watch.
That's awesome. That is awesome. And yeah, Julie, shouting out your pop collection, which audio listeners, come check us out on video on YouTube to see Cody's bomb pop collection in the background. But so before we get into that, because I'm really curious, like what things were spoiled for you ahead of time, what things surprised you. But there is one, we typically start with some Westeros news, and there is one pretty important one that we have to touch on first. And that is that Game of Thrones creator, A Song of Ice and Fire author, George R. R. Martin, wrote on his blog this past week, and basically, I don't want to say he let slip, but he confirmed that at one point, HBO was developing a spinoff about the city of Braavos, which is where Arya Stark goes to train with the Faceless Men in Game of Thrones. It's a really important location. And Braavos was apparently partially inspired by Amsterdam, which is what led to this. He was kind of recalling his travels over the summer and all that. So I'm going to read just his quote.
Yeah. So while we wait for Daniel to come back. So yeah, I'll read his quote. So he basically said, "One of these days, I need to write that story about Braavos. We were developing for HBO. They shelved that one a couple of years back, alas, but that does not mean I won't go back to it. After Winds of Winter is done, of course." So yeah, I mean, that's quite the, I'm always like hesitant when I feel like the priority needs to be finish Winds of Winter. But it's interesting to kind of let it casually just slip out there of like, oh yeah, this was a show. I mean, it's kind of interesting to me with George R. R. Martin, because of course, Winds of Winter, it's been in the works. As someone who's just catching up on Game of Thrones and the whole lore of it, even I know it's a running bit that he has taken quite a bit with this. And so it's, I don't know, I'm curious of what they had planned with this spinoff and what exactly it would have encompassed. I feel like it's definitely a story that could have been told. I feel like there was a lot that could have been dived into with the Faceless Men beyond what we saw across the series. But it's an interesting one for that to have been like in the works, and knowing that that could have been the one that we got maybe before House of Dragon, even, like, that HBO was considering at one point.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Hooray! Thanks, thanks. Man, my internet is so spotty. This is so fun fact for viewers, listeners. I've been in the process of getting better internet. This is the last week, so apologies for leaving you stranded, Cody. I'm assuming you read the quote. You talked about Braavos.
Yes, yeah. Throwing me right in the deep end, right? I said I've watched Game of Thrones, and you're like, go at it, I'm out. So yeah.
Yes. Now talk about this Braavos spinoff we know basically nothing about. Go. Yeah. So did you talk at all about, like, do you have any thoughts about what you would think something like this would be about, or if you'd watch it?
Yeah, I touched on a little bit about almost a surprise. Like, I feel like there's more story that we could explore, I think, with the Faceless Men. But it wouldn't be like the spinoff that I would have thought, like, watching and like, oh, let's go explore this storyline. And it's definitely interesting to think, like, could HBO have been having a conversation about, let's maybe do this one before House of the Dragon at one point, which is just crazy because I can't picture this one being like a marquee project. And I'm really curious to see what they would have explored had they moved forward with it.
Yeah, totally. So I think Victor in the chat said, I think they realized it needs to have Targaryens or it will tank. That's a tough one because all the spinoffs we know about, most of them are revolving around Targaryen. So maybe you're onto something there. But the Braavos, the thing that really struck me about George talking about this Braavos spinoff is that he said, one of these days I need to write that story about Braavos we were developing for HBO. Now, I don't know that he's ever actually going to do that. He's got so many things to write that I take that with a grain of salt. But it's interesting to hear him talk about this as though it was a project he would write because, you know, like the Nymeria spinoff, 10,000 Ships, he's never said something like that about, you know, all of the other ones. He's never been like, maybe I'll go write that as an actual story. It makes me wonder if the Braavos spinoff was about like the founding of Braavos, because that's kind of a thing that is like really shrouded in a lot of mystery in the Song of Ice and Fire lore. Like Braavos, if I remember right, it was started by like Valyrian slaves who escaped and then founded this city. So it seems like and the Faceless Men are like integral into that whole saga. And it's really not something that Martin has talked about a lot, aside from a little bit in The World of Ice and Fire, which is this world book you can get. So the fact that he's saying, maybe I should write that, makes me wonder like if it is like the deep lore of Braavos. But I'd watch it no matter what. I'd take a serial episode of the week, Faceless Men doing contracts and whatever. I think it'd be fun either way.
You know, now that that kind of would have been a fun angle of like a case of the, like, not case of the week, but almost like that format of like a storyline of the week of just like seeing them going on like a mission that's self-contained, but we get an overarching story. Definitely be a departure from what we've seen in this franchise. But I would have been curious to see how many seasons it would have maybe run if they were working on it. But yeah, it's interesting that he actually said, like, I was wanting to work, you know, we were working on this and I'm thinking of maybe still doing it. Because I feel like it shows, it's obviously something he's got some passion and interest behind. So maybe it'll re-enter the mix at some point.
Yeah, exactly. That feels telling to me that there's something juicy there. Even though that's just like a throwaway comment, just because, yeah, for a lot of these other shows, that's not something he said. So I hope we find out more about it at some point.
you almost have to wonder if he put that out into the universe to see what the reception is. Like, does this get a positive reception? Like, are people excited? Like, look, HBO, they're talking and they want this. I mean, it works. We've seen other creators do that. Like, get the fans talking, see, do they actually want this, and then use it to sell it.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't be totally off character from his blogging of the past few months. So who knows? And he did say that it is shelved. So it sounds like for right now, it's not being developed, which is, I'm fine with it, because they already have so many spinoffs. They need to get a few more of those off the ground and what have you first. But yeah, as Victor says, GRRM is the master planner. So I don't put anything past him. He's been using his blog like Tyrion Lannister, leveraging, you know, connections in King's Landing of late. but so speaking of, do you have anything else you want to say about Braavos before we move on to the heart of our show here today, Cody?
Nothing else on that. I mean, like I said, it'll be interesting to see if it was just a throwaway line or what comes of that. But I don't know. I'm glad HBO pivoted and prioritized something else.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. I would watch a Bravo spinoff. There's no world where it should have been the first spinoff or even the second, I think.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stepping away from Braavos to the rest of the Seven Kingdoms and Essos and everywhere else. So for all of you just joining, what the main thing we're going to discuss today is that Cody here just finished watching Game of Thrones for the very first time. And I don't know about you, but I really want to hear his thoughts about it and about all these things that we've all been mulling for years and years. So, Cody, my first question for you, we're going to start with a controversial one. How was season 8? Did it live up to the reputation of being terrible, or did you have a good time with this show through to the end?
You know, it's so funny because going into this, I remember all of the fan reactions, the backlash season 8 got. Like, so going into this binge, I almost was negatively minded. Like, oh, when I get to this, it's going to be a drop. I'm not going to like it. Maybe it's because I set such a low bar and like told myself I wouldn't, that I actually did. I really enjoyed the full series. I didn't think season 8 was an awful season. But I think part of it is, I know I went into it and was able to binge it within a very short span of time. I wasn't waiting 2 years between seasons. I didn't have these high expectations of what the final season would deliver. And so I kind of got to see it in its completed stage from start to finish and kind of digest it within a very short window versus these fans who had to wait years in between seasons and had these high expectations and hopes of where they want it. So I feel like the binge style, like going in blind and watching it start to finish as I did, I think it sets it up for better success than if you had been watching it when it was on HBO. Just by nature, because like I said, I didn't have those expectations that the fans had from like watching it and waiting in the anticipation building. And I think that's what helps it a good binge show if you haven't seen it before. is because you don't have those same expectations as the fans who were there along the ride, who actually had to go through it and like wait for those weekly episodes, wait between seasons. And yeah, I enjoyed the end, the final season. I enjoyed season 7. And it was a really good binge. It was hard not to, even when the episodes got longer at the end, it was hard to just like stop at one episode and not go on to another.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, so some interesting comments here. So Victor saying binging and knowing the fan reaction doesn't give a true experience of how excruciating season 8 was. It is interesting, though, because, you know, like, so I had read the books before the show even started. So the amount of expectations on especially the final 3 seasons of Game of Thrones, but especially the last one, it is really hard to, I can't think of any other series that had a similar situation where it's like they were delivering on not only the end of the show expectations, but fan expectations for people who had been wondering how this story from the books was going to end, going all the way back to the mid-90s, where it's like, even though the show's its own version, it's, you still presume you're getting some bits of what the ending might have been from the books too. So I mean, I'm really happy for you that you were able to watch it and enjoy it, because it does. I do think, you know, I rewatched season 8 recently, too. And I do feel like there were some, they didn't take their time quite as much as they did previous seasons. But it's still not a drop off like the final season of Dexter is a drop off, where it feels like, have you seen Dexter, Cody?
I have not, but I can equate it to like Once Upon a Time, which had a very significant drop off in its last season.
Yeah. Dexter season 8 was like, you could feel that it felt like they gave up, like with some of the things happening in it. It was really sad. So yeah, like Martha's saying, the second time I watched season 8, I felt better about it. So let me ask you, you had some high praise specifically for The Long Night when we were talking in private about this before. So was that the highlight of season 8 for you, or did you enjoy other parts as much? Like, give me your thoughts on some specifics here for season 8.
Yeah, I get to what you, the Long Night is probably one of my favorite episodes just from my binge watch. It was, I mean, what was it? 90 minutes, something crazy long, but it did not feel like a long episode. And that's always a sign of a good episode to me, is like, same thing with Stranger Things season 4. Like, we had some episodes that were really long, but they didn't drag out. Like, the pacing worked perfectly, that you're not sitting there like checking your, you know, phone, seeing what time it is, how much longer you have in the episode. And I mean, I was hooked from start to finish. And I think we talked about it too. Like, I know I found out after the fact that this was an episode that was very hard for some viewers to watch just because of the brightness. And I, as I mentioned to you, I think I just set myself unexpectedly up for a good binge because I was watching it in at night and the lights were off. And so I didn't have to adjust or struggle to see what was going on in the episode. But it felt like this culmination of like, we've been talking and we've seen like the story laid to path, and then we got this battle and they left it all on the field and just went there from start to finish. There was just so many incredible moments, and each character kind of got moments to shine, which I always like in ensemble shows, because sometimes you can get an episode that's just a very character specific episode, and others kind of feel like they're there just for the sake of being in the episode because they had the actors on set and they needed them, and they make a random one-off. But I feel like each character kind of got a moment in that episode. And I mean, come on, the moment when Arya, you know, takes out the Night King is, I remembered that, but I forgot it when I was watching, and I was like, oh yeah, this happens. And I'm like, yeah, that was just as epic as I expected it to be. But no, I really enjoyed it. I've told our colleague Natalie, I was really satisfied with the end sequence, like where we kind of left off and kind of did like the breaking off and kind of getting to see the Starks go in their different directions. For me, maybe it's because I binged it the way I did, but it felt like that full circle moment of like, we started the season, it was very much in season 1 about the Starks. And so to end with those characters and kind of see their journey, end with just enough to where you see where it's ended, but the door is left open for you to use your imagination if the story continues. I really enjoyed that. And I wasn't entirely mad about who ended up on the Iron Throne at the end. I knew who ended up, so going in, I already knew that. It was kind of a curiosity of seeing how that journey happened and how he got to that stage. And yeah, there's other characters I maybe would have rather seen on the Iron Throne, but I wasn't like totally angry with that ending. seeing Sansa as the Queen of the North was definitely a highlight. I loved that direction. Yeah. And yeah, I enjoyed the season. I could have done without Dany's heel turn. I'm kind of indifferent on that still. Still processing my feelings exactly for how I feel about that. But that was probably the one thing, which I know that was a topic of much debate and discussion when the series was on as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really fair. I was going to ask you, did the heel turn land for you? I feel like if you're saying you're indifferent to it, that's probably a little telling in its own way that maybe not that they botched it, but that it could have been more effective. You know, thinking about some of these like great character turns and betrayals and TV shows and stuff like that. But it sounds like it didn't bother you, at least.
I think what it was is right from when we met Dany, she became an instant favorite for me. So knowing where her journey ended, I'm like, I don't know how exactly we're going to get there. I know where it's ending. Gotcha. I mean, I think they did a good job of paving. Like, they could have, I think, been a little bit more heavy-handed almost with like setting the story into place and not doing as quickly of a turn there. I mean, because there were definitely glimmers we saw of like them building up to it in a sense.
Totally agree.
But I think that's where I'm more indifferent is I just love that character and Emilia Clarke is just amazing. So that's where I was like, I just love this character and maybe the ending could have been different for her, but I wasn't mad with how it played out afterwards. I think it did play out like they did it well storyline wise after. It's just as a fan of that character and actress, I was like, I wish we'd maybe done something different here.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I feel like there were a few characters in particular that I wished we'd gotten a little more time with, like Theon's sister. I know that's a smaller one, but like it still felt like we could have done with like one or two extra scenes kind of tying up some of these characters. But yeah, the Dany heel turn, it's interesting because obviously that was very divisive. But I fully agree with you that they did kind of seed that all throughout the show. I don't think anyone, you know, it was devastating to watch. But it's one of those things where it's like you knowing that it was coming almost doesn't ruin it. Because I think if they set it up well enough, you should kind of feel that it's about to happen anyway by the time you get there, you know? So let me ask you this. It sounds like, so quality dip, not really for you. Who were some of your favorites or least favorites in the show?
So it's kind of funny. I don't have like any least favorites who jump out of me. I mean, of course, I hated the villains that we all hated. Cheered when Joffrey got his, and of course, you know, some of those different villains. But that's the whole point, is they introduce these characters to make us hate them. You need those good foils. So it's like, I can't fault the writers and the characters because we need that in a show. Otherwise, it's boring if you don't have the conflict. It's funny, I had like seeing how my thoughts on some of the characters evolved as the show went on. I remember I told Natalie at one point, like, I do not like Jamie in season one. And then like, I came to really appreciate that character as he went through his development, his arc. And so it was funny how like that turned around. She's like, give it time. And sure enough, like as I watched it and got in there with the character and got to see the arc they took him on, I really turned to like that character. Arya was for sure the character, like from start to finish. I love that character so much. I'd love to have seen a spinoff with her. Like that would have been a really fun spinoff. Seeing her explore and kind of go down that journey. Sansa was another one that took me a little bit to warm up to. But then of course, as she kind of went along with the seasons and we got to see her development and growth, I think she had one of the best arcs over the course of the show, just with coming into her own as a character and as a leader. And you just could see the shifts between seasons as Sophie Turner kind of embraced the character and kind of got to grow. And she went from the quiet little bird as we saw her in first seasons and really just grew into this leader. And it was one of my favorite arcs across the show. Of course, the obvious ones like Jon Snow. How can you not like a character like Jon Snow? If I'm being, I'd like to meet someone who doesn't, just to hear what their thoughts are on him, because it's definitely just such a good character.
Yeah, totally. It's interesting. I feel like, so Jaime and Sansa are almost two of the perfect examples of like a character who's not really set up to be super likable at first. Like, most of our introduction to Sansa in the show is her being kind of a jerk to Arya, her little sister, and like with her head in the clouds, and then she goes through all these like horrifying events that shape her into the woman she becomes. And Jaime, like, he's a straight villain to start. You know, he's guilty of the inciting incident, really, of the series, shoving Bran Stark out of a window. But I feel like that's one of like the great strengths of Game of Thrones, is taking characters, making you really dislike them, and then being like, but wait, here's their humanity, and maybe you shouldn't have judged them quite so quickly. But it is interesting too with Sansa, because she had a, I don't want to say a very different arc than her book, but she's in a, so in the books where they are ended off right now, she is still in the Vale, and she is presumably going to have a larger arc in the Vale whenever George R. R. Martin releases The Winds of Winter. So they really kind of went off book for, especially Sansa's like final few seasons. And it seems like they still, for the most part, nailed it in theory. You know, we don't know how it'll compare to the books, but I really liked Sansa as a character too. So I totally feel you with that.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, you mentioned before that some moments you knew were coming, right? Like Dany's heel turn maybe, and some of the bigger ones, and others surprised you. What were some of the things that really shocked you on this watch?
So one of the few deaths that I didn't know about was Oberyn. When I watched that episode, man. I was like, oh, I was like devastated watching that episode, and just like my jaw hit the floor, because that was one moment I just hadn't had spoiled for me. And I'm glad I didn't have that moment, because it was one of the few that just like had that absolute shock of like, I didn't know this was coming. And even though there were things like I knew were coming, like seeing them finally happen, like I knew Cersei eventually took action, and there was the big explosion with the High Sparrow and that, but like seeing the story play out and the build up to it, it was so like rewarding to watch the episode. When Lady Elena when like the tell Cersei, I wanted to know, like, I knew that's an infamous like I knew that was coming, but when I got to the actual scene, it was like so fun just to like see it play out. I think the one thing I was most disappointed about that I didn't know was how Jaime and Cersei's story ended. It felt a little anticlimactic. I don't know. I was fitting that they died together. but it was just, it wasn't how I expected that character to go out. It was kind of underwhelming for a character that powerful, especially Cersei, to kind of go out in the way she did. I wanted to see I don't know, some bigger epic. I think she deserved a bigger and epic final sequence than maybe she was given. So that is one critique I have of the finale and the final season, is just, she's such a great character. Like, she was a character that you love to hate, but then also would sympathize in certain points, and you're like, why am I sympathizing with this character who's done all these awful things? And I wish she had gotten a little bit more of an epic final sequence. But yeah, definitely, I don't think anything topped Oberyn's death, because I just did not see that coming. I was like, just stunned.
Yeah, that's a good one to not know about too. Like, in terms of like the Game of Thrones shockers, you know, that's up there on the list with all of the best ones, like the Red Wedding, the Purple Wedding, like Jon Snow getting stabbed, like Oberyn getting his head smushed in is pretty good.
Yeah, I see Robert asking it. I also did not know Tommen died the way he did. It was kind of I kind of felt bad. It was just kind of like so random of like just walks right out the window, and I'm like, oh, okay.
Yep. Definitely going with that Shakespearean tragedy of characters just giving up and walking out into empty space. Very, very sad. Yeah. Tommen's death.
Oh, and you did mention the Red Wedding. I knew that was coming, but I will say I didn't know how exactly everything went down. I knew the characters who died in that episode, but I didn't know the full detail. So it was kind of like that like cloud lurking over my early part of the binge of like, I know I'm coming to this, I'm not ready. And even like seeing it play out, I was still like shocked when, you know, it actually started. I'm like, oh, here it goes. So even knowing that was coming my way, it still was kind of like seeing it versus knowing it was coming was definitely different.
Yeah, totally. I could see how that would be the case. It's different seeing like the memes and all the reactions and then watching it as you're going through, you know, three seasons of getting to know Rob and Catelyn and everything. And then that's it. I feel like there was another. Oh, yeah. Another moment I wanted to ask you about was, how did you feel about the Battle of the Bastards and the end of Ramsay Bolton? Because that's another big moment in the series.
I love that episode. It was another really, when this show does battle episodes, I don't think there was necessarily a bad one that I can think of. Like, they just, the scale of the battles. And I kind of love that Sansa got to kind of deliver that final nail in the coffin with things. Like, I would have understood if they, you know, gave Jon the kill there, but I kind of like Sansa getting to flip the script and kind of turn his dogs on him and get her final revenge.
Yeah, totally. I like that too. I thought that was a nice, you know, Jon and Ramsay had their rivalry, but like, he'd wronged Sansa a lot more. So it was good to see her get that moment, feeding him to his own dogs. Pretty brutal. All right. So we've talked about this a bit. Are there any other moments or things you want to shout out? Things you loved, things the fans are wrong about, things they're right about, or anything in general you want to, the floor is yours to discuss Game of Thrones as you will.
That's a daunting, very open-ended question. I'm trying to think. I mean,
you're
I think the
to make
biggest
it
thing
easy.
I think the biggest thing is, if you're someone like me who didn't watch the show when it was on air, don't let the final season chatter you've seen on social media scare you away from watching. Because I think when you see so much criticism, it's like, I'm not even going to bother giving it a chance. And I think it's definitely worth going in. You might feel differently. You might agree with the people who were watching it and the fans who followed it along the way. But I don't think, don't let the fan just like, it's very daunting when you hear like so much hatred around a final season. It's like, oh, do I want to invest my time in watching this 8-season show when everybody hates the ending? I've been that person before. Like, I'll read reviews and I'm like, they don't really think it's good. I've already got enough on my watch list. I won't give it a shot. But it really is such an amazing series. I think it actually works almost better as a binge watch when you don't have to wait years between season, because you can kind of appreciate and digest things at a little bit quicker pace. And I think that does help with why I didn't hate the final season. And also I don't think I've mentioned and confirmed it, but I haven't read the book. So I also don't have that side of things to be comparing the books to the show, which of course always helps with adaptations. Yeah. But I think the show will surprise you, even if you do know, like I said, I went in knowing things and it did not take away from my enjoyment of binging the show. I mean, I binged through this series in, I don't know, maybe a month's time. It was just very, very addictive of like, oh, I need to watch more episodes. If you haven't watched it like me, finally dive in. Don't let the controversy around the final season scare you away from diving in and enjoying this show, because it's a really great show, and I'm kind of excited now to just see what's next and know the lore a little bit more. I'm almost curious to see what I'll think of House of the Dragon season 3 now, having more background on the franchise, and because I went in House of the Dragon blind and just watched that without watching Game of Thrones.
That's got to be such an interesting watching experience to have seen House of the Dragon before Game of Thrones. Did it change the way you looked at House of the Dragon at all? Like, did you find yourself thinking about the other show at all while you watched this one?
I mean, honestly, it was kind of, you know, when they reference different points, I'm kind of curious to go back and maybe watch different parts of season 2 in particular again and see it differently. But I remember that was like an ongoing thread with like watching season 2 was like, oh, I don't have the knowledge of Game of Thrones, of the book, so I'm very blind in what I'm watching. Which is, I don't know, liberating in a sense of like, I don't have the expectations that a lot of other fans have as a passionate fan, which I've got many of those other ones without other fandoms that have adapted things that I've read and that. And you, it's hard not to compare when you've got the fandom of a book, because when you love something and then you see it adapted and they change things that you loved or they take out things that you loved, it's hard not to be like, well, what are you doing? Because you fall in love with the source material, and then to see it changed, it does, you know, understandably make you, you know, not like what you're getting. But I don't think it definitely didn't impact my ability to watch House of the Dragon, which is nice. I think they made it accessible. Nice. Like, there's definitely stuff that went over my head that I think if I watched it again now, I'd pick up on. But it was easy for me as someone who just came in blind to watch it and not be entirely lost, which was nice.
Yeah, that's a sign of a good spinoff, prequel, whatever you want to call it to me. If you can watch it without needing to have seen the other one, but you'll maybe get more out of it. Cool. Well, Cody, thank you so much for sharing your fresh Game of Thrones takes here on the show. This has been so exciting because obviously you can see in the chat, we've got people listing off some of their favorite moments like Hard Home, which shout out, Hard Home is, I think, one of the best examples of Thrones going off book, because that doesn't happen at all in the book, and doing it really, really well. Littlefinger's death, people are saying they liked. So yeah, it's really cool to get your take on this. Thank you for coming on and talking about it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And yeah, it's very fresh because I just finished my watch over the weekend. So you're getting my very fresh and raw reactions.
Which, got a shout out too. You said you watched it in like a month. So that's like two seasons a week, give or take. So like, kudos you. You did the work, man.
When I get hooked by a show, it's very easy for me to just clear and just focus on that and put a lot of other shows by the wayside. And that definitely happened with this. A lot of weekend binge watches. And
awesome. Awesome. So awesome. But there is another show that I think you and I have both been watching, a few other shows, but one other we're going to talk about next. You have any final Game of Thrones thoughts before we move on to the next segment of our show?
I don't think so. I'm excited to talk about this next show we're going to dive into.
Okay. So this week is the 2-episode finale of Agatha All Along, which is Marvel's most recent show that's on Disney Plus. And we've been talking about Agatha throughout, you know, its airing, but I don't think we've really done like a dedicated segment to Agatha All Along. And knowing, Cody, that you're a huge Marvel fan and that you've been enjoying it, this kind of felt like the right week to dig into Agatha a little bit before we watch the final 2 episodes, which no one has seen, for the record, because sometimes we get screeners ahead of time and we talk about them in little bits and stuff like that. So far as I'm aware, no screeners were sent out at all for these final 2 episodes of Agatha All Along. So we'll all be watching them fresh together tonight and tomorrow. So Cody, how are you feeling about Agatha at this late stage? Is this living up to what you hope for in a Marvel show? Is the MCU back?
Yeah, absolutely. WandaVision remains my top level. It's still my favorite. I know we've had a lot of amazing shows.
So good.
Maybe controversial. I know a lot of people kind of put a battle between Loki and WandaVision, but for me, WandaVision just was the perfect blend of just showing that the MCU can do different stuff. It's not all just action fights and that. Like, it was such, and it was kind of like a love letter to TV too.
Totally.
And I had high expectations going into Agatha, and I'm very, very grateful that they've exceeded them. Right out the gate, I think was the premiere was such a fun way to tie in the TV nod with WandaVision and quickly like set up the franchise. That end sequence in the premiere when Agatha's kind of going through all of her WandaVision character stages before the reveal, that sequence is one of my favorites from the full season, and just Marvel in general was just so brilliantly like a way to unravel things. And I mean, it's just been one of those shows that's gotten better with each episode that's passed. And I'm very, very excited. You're correct. Yeah. Disney does not do screeners for the final episode, so everybody gets to go in blind, which I really like. You don't have to worry about spoilers leaking out ahead of time from like some outlets of screened episodes, or an insider talks with somebody who's seen it and leaks a major plot point. And I'm really just eager to see how it's going to end, because this is a first for us. We've gotten two episode premieres, but we haven't gotten a two episode Marvel finale event like this for a live action show. And it makes me wonder how the two episodes are going to play off of one another if they decided to drop them at the same time.
Same. I was thinking about that just this morning because I saw they released like a clip, I think, from episode 8. And, you know, it was like, oh, the first clip from episode 8. And I was like, there's a whole nother episode we won't have seen anything from by the time it drops. And that's really exciting because you're right. We haven't gotten a two episode live action Marvel finale like this, and it does make me feel like it's going to feel like an event. And dropping it the night before Halloween too, like, one thing I've loved about Agatha is that it feels like a TV show. And I think Marvel, that's kind of been an issue with some of the Marvel series, like they've wanted to be like mini series events and kind of, or like 6-hour movies, that's in air quotes for the audio listeners, and like sometimes that just doesn't really work as well, because like you need something different for a show to work as a 6-hour movie, quote unquote, than you do as serialized television. There's a different flow you hope for from something like that. And Agatha, you're right. It did feel like it kind of went back to WandaVision a little bit, almost more than I expected in terms of, you know, we know we're a TV show. Each episode feels like its own episode. You know, it's got a beginning and a middle and an end and a different style. And
yeah, it's definitely one of those shows that heading into, I mean, first perfect timing, dropping it to where they would time it out right before Halloween, because this show has fully done spooky vibes. I don't think we've talked about it, but I really enjoyed how they've kind of done like fun and subtle nods to witches of pop culture. Of course, spoiler alert, in episode 7, we definitely see our most on the nose nod to iconic witches. We could see characters dressing as these iconic characters. We could see Agatha as the Wicked Witch of the West. We get to see Teen as Maleficent. We get to see Lilia as Glinda the Good Witch. And so it's such a fun nod. And then they've had like little references along the way of like referencing pop culture witches, of like Lilia saying in one episode, oh, I had a friend that got pushed into an oven. And like, they're fun, just little out of pocket moments. And remind you, this is also a comedy, and it's okay to have fun balancing out the drama. And I'm anxious to see how it ends, because we know with Agatha, they viewed this show, or we've been told they viewed the show as kind of a three-part story. So it's kind of part two, kicked off with WandaVision, has continued into Agatha, and then we get to see it conclude with Vision Quest. And so there's a lot of questions about how this finale is going to pave the way for Vision Quest, knowing that they're connected. There's hints that we'll see a character that hasn't appeared in Agatha Online be a major character in Vision Quest, and that's Tommy, the Scarlet Witch and Vision's other child. So I'm kind of eager to see, do we get a post-credit scene that tees up that? Do we leave the door very open? Like, it's exciting to go into those episodes and get to see what Marvel has up its sleeves and how it'll set up the next chapter. But I definitely hope, and I think we haven't seen the last of some of these characters, be it Catherine Hahn as Agatha, Joe Locke as Teen, aka Billy. I think these are characters we're definitely going to see more of as the series progresses, and I'm excited to see where that goes. And speaking of Marvel, I'll pivot right into our next segue while we wait for Daniel. We just got a bunch of confirmation on what's coming for Marvel. So literally on the eve of Agatha All Along's finale date, Marvel dropped a new promo on Disney Plus that I think might have came prematurely. I'm almost certain it was meant to arrive before Agatha. And it basically laid out the upcoming Marvel slate of releases. And so we got confirmation Deadpool and Wolverine will begin streaming on November 12th of this year. So coming just before Thanksgiving, I'm sure that's going to be a popular release. A lot of people are probably going to watch it ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday. Agatha All Along turns out won't be the final Marvel show of this year. We're getting the final season, the third season of What If, on December 22nd. It still hasn't been confirmed whether it's going to be releasing with daily episodes like we saw with season two, if they're doing a full season binge, or if it'll premiere and do weekly episodes. But we've got that'll come in right at the end of the year. Kicking off 2025, which I can't even be looking ahead to 2025, is Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. It's going to be the first Marvel show of the new year. That'll premiere January 29th. Seems like we're getting weekly releases for that one. We'll wait to see. Our next big live-action one, the one that I'm most excited about coming in 2025, is Daredevil Born Again. Coming March 4th, this was confirmed at New York Comic-Con in October. Of course, we get Daredevil back in a new iteration of this character. I think that's going to be Marvel's, I'm going to go biggest series of the new year. They've already renewed it for season two. After Daredevil, we'll get Ironheart, which comes June 24th, which is, I believe, two years after it was originally supposed to drop, because this was a show that was originally announced for fall 2023, and now it's coming in summer 2025. And then after Ironheart, we'll get Eyes of Wakanda premiering on August 6th. And then our last two releases are a mystery. We get Marvel Zombies, which is a spinoff of What If, will be coming in October 2025. It's, I believe, a four-episode event series. So again, another perfectly timed holiday release for that one. And then we'll get to close the year with Wonder Man coming in December 2025. Interested to see where they slot those two in and how quickly they'll premiere. But I have to admit, I was not expecting quite the slate from Marvel to be confirmed for 2025. Especially after it feels like Bob Iger and everybody has been kind of just talking about slowing down production on Marvel. And needless to say, we've got plenty of stuff coming in the new year to look forward to. And speaking of looking forward to, I know we've got our What Are We Watching segment. So we'll see when Daniel pops in to talk about what he's been watching. But in addition to Agatha and Game of Thrones, been enjoying the new season of Only Murders in the Building. If you haven't watched, the season just ended. The finale dropped on Monday. And once again, more murder, mayhem, and mystery coming our way. With that cast, it's always a good time. And we, of course, will see what else is coming fall TV-wise as the year kind of proceeds there. But yeah, let me see. What else am I watching that's fun? Agatha is definitely a highlight. If you haven't started the season, dive on into that one. You'll get to binge all the season. Perfect watch for Halloween, especially with the finale dropping tonight. But yeah, do we want to go ahead and just pivot right on into a solo lightning round? All right, so let's dive into the lightning round. So we've got some various news briefs that we'll just run through, and I'll give you a quick update on what's happening across the world of entertainment. So up first, we have got Good Omens is coming to an end in quite an interesting way. Instead of getting a third season, we are going to be getting a 90-minute special, which they still aren't billing as a movie, which doesn't I don't quite understand why we're doing that. But there's, of course, been some controversy with the show's creator, and so they decided just to wrap it up with a movie. Next thing, some disappointing news for the Star Wars Rey sequel. The movie has lost its screenwriter, Steven Knight. Setbacks like this, I feel like they always seem daunting and bold, but we've seen it before. I think it'll just be a matter of finding a new fit, and obviously there was something going on behind the scenes that we need to get ironed out and sorted out there. So we'll see what Lucasfilm comes up with, but definitely a little bit of a disappointing setback to know the movie has lost its screenwriter at the moment. All right, rolling right along. Ironically, I didn't mean to name drop Squid Game earlier, but David Fincher is reportedly working on an English language version of Squid Game. Not sure how to feel about this. I know Netflix is wanting to keep this franchise alive and sees it as a cash cow after the success, but there's such a thing as overdoing it. And I don't know. We'll see where that goes and if we need it. And then, let's see, Greta Gerwig, she's going to be fighting Netflix to show her Narnia movies in theater. So of course, the movies were originally going to be dropping on Netflix. We don't know what the state of them are, but now she's fighting to get them into the theaters, which makes sense, honestly, for this franchise. Narnia is the theatrical release that deserves to be seen on the big screen. So I'm rooting for her and hope she wins this fight. And then, oh, Daniel, I think we've got you back.
I think so, maybe. But I miss. God, it's like the internet knows that we're ditching it for better service this week. So it had to get one last bit of spite in. So sorry about that, everybody.
Welcome back. We're in the midst of a crazy one-sided lightning round. So I am happy to see you back so I can tag off. And I'll get one more in there before I hand it off to you. So Game of Thrones star Sophie Turner reportedly in the running for Lara Croft from Amazon's upcoming Tomb Raider show. Thoughts?
I don't love Sophie Turner as a Dreamcast for Lara Croft. I do love Tomb Raider. I will watch it. But I feel like there's got to be a more spot on casting maybe than Sophie Turner for that part, personally. All right. Here's one for you, Cody. The late Christopher Lee will appear in the animated Lord of the Rings movie, The War of the Rohirrim, thanks to archival recordings of his voice.
Yeah, this one I'm curious on. I need to read up on it. I think it's a fun moment in the making, but I am kind of hesitant to know what Lee's thoughts were on like the use of his image posthumously. And so I'm kind of like, is this something he would have wanted? If he was game for it, I think it's a great thing, fun for the fans. If not, it feels a little icky.
Yeah, hard agree with all of that. All right, why don't you ask me this bookish one next?
Yeah, so we've got The Unbroken author C.L. Clarke is releasing an arcane tie-in novel called The Embessa Chosen of the Wolf and coming out February 18th.
Yeah, I'm super stoked about this. So C.L. Clarke is a fantasy author. She wrote The Unbroken. I forget the name of the second book. But doing a tie-in novel for Arcane about the leader of the Noxians. So that's just like such a perfect match. Like I remember seeing C.L. Clarke nerd out about Arcane back during season one. So love to see it.
All right, I want to throw you a bonus lightning one.
You've done a lot of lightning so far. So any you want to.
Well, I'm curious. This one's off script. Do you hope that it'll be a spinoff? Because I know Arcane is coming to an end, correct, on Netflix. It's Netflix series.
Yes.
So would you like to see this story adapted eventually?
I don't know that I would want an Ambessa spinoff. Because I think she's already getting a lot of coverage in Arcane, but I think there should be some kind of spinoff. They've said that they're hoping to do other League of Legends stories after Arcane, and I think they totally should do that. They're ending Arcane with two seasons because that's the story that they wanted to tell. So yeah, sign me up for spinoffs. All right. Are you ready for the final bit of lightning round here, Cody?
I'm ready.
Okay. You've been an absolute champion on this podcast today. All right, last one. So the Dune Prophecy crew is already planning future seasons, and it sounds like they could span centuries.
You know what? I'm game for it. I think it's smart when creators plan ahead because it helps them know where they're going. And if you have a roadmap, you tend to tell a better story than if you're just keeping a show going for the sake of keeping it going. So I like that they're being proactive and betting on the show ahead of time and planning for future seasons because hopefully that means HBO will return the favor and bet big on them.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And that is our show for today. It's been an exciting one. Cody, thank you for rolling with the punches, giving us your opinions on Game of Thrones, on Agatha, and captaining the ship as we had some technical difficulty plot twists. And
yeah, definitely. Thanks for having
me. We're just going to chat.
We'll blame it all. It was Agatha all along. She, you know, cut your internet out for today. Perfectly timed and branded there. But yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a blast getting to talk Game of Thrones, Agatha, and fill the space talking Marvel, which I can do any day of the week. So I really enjoyed coming on and can't wait to do it the next time.
Yes, yes. Can't wait. Always a pleasure to have you on here, Cody. And for all of you listening, thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you're on YouTube. Find us on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Music, all the places you get your podcast. Oh dear, the lights are flickering in here like there's a ghost. So before something really bad goes amiss, the haunting of this pink room, we're going to sign off. So thank you so much for tuning in and take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.